bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. It's Friday afternoon. The weekend is starting here. And you can catch up on all the photography news and listen to us make it up as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
The great panel that's joining me, as ever, the wonderful, wonderful Christopher Forsman, guru from Chicago, the Windy City. How you doing, mate?
I am sore.
You ran, apparently.
Yeah, I did a 5K last night.
Bad luck.
And I'm really proud of myself because I didn't train all summer.
Just so that you could run a 5K. That was stupid.
Didn't run once.
Good lad.
All summer until last night.
Okay. But ready
33 for... 33 minutes, not too bad.
Well, that's not too shabby for no training.
No.
Next to him, Mr. Alex Fox. How you doing, sir?
I'm okay. Thank you very much.
We're going out of order just because of the fact I've gotten that way on the line. But what have you been up to, mate, apart from arguing with customers about picture quality and calibration?
Nothing. I've just been arguing with customers, trying to...
What else do you need, really?
What else?
I wish I had professional customers to go with my professional ability. That was what I need.
That would be great. And talking of professional, Mr. Kevin Newsom from Tampa, Florida. How you doing, mate?
Doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure having you on. It's always have someone who knows what they're talking about. what have you been up to?
Me? Mm. I'm shooting a lot. I'm doing a lot of this time of year for us. It's high school seniors. Executives go year round. Did a little commercial job the other day. It was a lot of fun at a personal trainer's fitness shop. And so I've been busy. My camera room is staying steady right now. That's good. That's good news.
In this climate, mate, that's fine and dandy. I'm doing all right as well at the minute, which is nice. The week in photography news, it's a bit of a mixed bag. There's no stories that are consistent or that follow on. It would seem, though, that the Olympic police have been shifting the goalposts as far as lenses go. Chris Plant, who's a photography enthusiast, took in a Nikon D3 with a 28-300mm and a 14-24mm, and he got told that he couldn't. So he got the ticket to watch the men's gymnastics on Saturday, and they said, no, you couldn't take it. Large photographic and broadcast equipment over 30 centimetres in length, including tripods and monopods, are banned. But they rejected him on the number of lenses he got. Kev, you picked up on this story. You said you were quite interested about the photography and how do you get cameras in.
Yeah, I found it interesting that they said no professional-looking cameras. And then they wouldn't define what that meant beyond anything that had a detachable lens. But they did say it would include mirrorless, compact, interchangeable lens cameras manufactured by Panasonic, Sony, and so on. Panasonic's an official sponsor of the Olympics, and they're not letting their product into the stadiums. That can't bode well with Panasonic. But, you know, it sounds like a great place for the Nokia 808 40-megapixel iPhone or whatever it is.
Yeah, we got that coming up. They've done a comparison with the Pentax 645D, which is interesting. Chris, any thoughts? I mean, it is a police. The Olympic Games is a police state.
Yeah, I don't even understand the point of it. I don't honestly understand the point of it. I mean, in this day and age, I mean, one of the guys shooting, is it for the Guardian or the Independent or something, is shooting with an iPhone 4 and a pair of Canon binoculars. I mean, what difference does it make what people bring in and take pictures with? Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people going in and out of the stadium, so I can imagine that things like, you know, if there's a fire egress or something, you don't want people with huge amounts of bags and stuff that people are going to trip over, like tripods and monopods. But a monopod's no worse than a walking stick, surely.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be uproar if you were told you couldn't take your walking stick in. Alex, you have both in one.
I do.
Do you reckon you could have passed that one off as a monopod or as a walking stick?
Oh, I'd need a crutch of some sort. I'll tell him I'm an injured athlete and I need this to get into the room. This is a debacle, and it was always going to be. How can you ask people to police something with absolutely no knowledge whatsoever about the subject they're policing?
Mm.
Right.
It's just, it's It's a waste of time, and I reckon the guy was particularly unlucky because of all the people I know that have been to the Olympics, and you know, I'm next door it, so there's quite a few of us have basically said, no, everyone's fine. I mean, what's in your bag? You got a bomb? No? Okay, go in. You know, he must have been pretty unlucky to get caught, and there just had to be someone on the gate that, you know, was having the type of day where he wanted to be a pain. I mean, what I like about the fact that half of the policemen at the Olympics know me in some way anyway, because I'm a local hoodlum, as they call it. So I probably wouldn't get through the door in the first place with or without a camera.
Yeah, let's just piss him off. What really tickled me was there was one conversation between the security guard and the guy saying that there's a printing error and you shouldn't be taken in a second lens. We're only allowing cameras in with one lens. That's an error with the rules. And then he says, they wouldn't normally allow a lens that's wider than 35 millimetres. And I go, well, it's not. It's 200 millimetres. And you can just imagine having that conversation to the point where the dude's head explodes.
Right.
Because he's talking about the physical dimension of 35 millimetres, 3.5 centimetres diameter, opposed to focal length. That's a Monty Python sketch.
But also, why not take an FX size lens on a DX size back, and then you get your multiplier anyway? How are they going to work that one out? You're right; their heads would explode.
Yeah, no, but the dude was talking about the physical size, I think.
Yeah, and that does go back to my point of, you know, who's policing this? You might actually be better off with monkeys.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you get the works of Shakespeare at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Cost a fortune in typewriters, though.
Kevin mentioned this one as well. They've done a standoff because the pixelage is the same, allegedly, and that's a kind of in quotes because it's not really the same, is it? But a 40 megapixel camera phone versus a 40 megapixel proper camera, the Pentax 4.5D medium format. And they've put them head to head and taken some pictures. And what do you think, fellas?
I'm not seeing it. I looked at the images and it just didn't hold up. There's no comparison. The fact that it's the surface size of the sensor is 17 times smaller in that iPhone than it is in the proper camera. You can have as many pixels as you want. They're just cutting the same amount of space or even less space into more pieces. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't add up for me, and the images didn't hold up. I didn't see what the big deal was.
You really? I mean, we'll try and show you a few of the pictures here. Hang on, I need to drag them off. But anyone else got anything to add on the quality of the images?
I mean, I've seen images from the 41 megapixel straight from the Nokia, and I mean, They are pretty sharp. They're pretty sharp, and they're pretty impressive, but you have to consider they are coming from a phone. And I think that given that, I mean, the images are as good as a lot of compact cameras out there, but they're still 40 megapixels, and they can be enlarged quite a bit more than what you can get from even an inexpensive compact camera. I mean, I did kind of the same thing. I took an iPhone 4S out and compared it to a Canon 20D as one of the comparisons. And honestly, a lot of the shots held up pretty well. You zoom into the pixel level, they're definitely noisier from the iPhone. Edges aren't quite as sharp. But again, it's like, you know, it's like I took a Fiat 500 and raced it against a Ferrari and said, well, you know, the Fiat just didn't really hold up. I was really surprised the Fiat didn't hold up.
I mean, that's exactly the point to make here, is that these cameras are discussing the size or the data amount in an image, not the detail with which these images can be captured.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a very key part of this. I mean, we're showing a picture there on the video of one. Here's another one that was there. And you're sitting there going, well, actually, that looks really kind of crappy. But actually, that's zoomed in detail. And it's zoomed in detail based on that picture there, which is probably shot at 500 meters away.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start thinking about that's 500 meters away and that's the zoomed in view, that's not that bad.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I mean, look at the tiny little part of the image it's looking at.
Exactly. That's quite impressive. So if you're talking about taking the image for, you know, okay, you're going to start blowing this up onto a billboard, it's going to crack up terribly. But if you're talking about taking a very high quality image for your holidays, this is significantly better than a lot of other camera phones that are out there.
Yeah.
It's not a comparison test. I think it's a joke, but.
I'd even suggest that, honestly, if you were to just to fit or edge to edge this image from the Nokia on a billboard, it would actually look fine because the viewer is going to be so far away from it. They're not going to be looking at, comparing the roof tiles in this tower. You know what I mean? The level of detail this is zoomed into. I mean, they're going to be so far away from the billboard, they're never going to see the difference in detail here.
Teresa said it looks like they didn't manage to hold the camera still enough either. There's some kind of movement in there. And there might be just certainly on that view of the columns, there's probably a little movement there. But that's aberration, I would have said anyway. That's aberration off the lens.
Could be both.
But if you're talking about a camera that's 17 times smaller than the sensor, then it's not bad.
No, like I said, I mean, I looked at some of the sample images that Nokia had taken and, zoomed them in all the way. And you could still see like details on people's faces that were like in little tiny sections of the photo. It was pretty impressive that this technology fits into something that slides into your pocket. And I think like some people kind of get lost in the fact that like, This fits in your pocket.
Yeah. It's impressive given the market that it's aimed at. It's not impressive against a quality camera at 40 megapixels, I know.
Sure.
Alex, you going to buy this for work? Or?
Yeah, the way I'm feeling at the moment, that's all they deserve.
Oh, that looks really great. Way better than that stuff that you sent through last week on that really expensive camera.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, it's a very good analogy that Chris used between sort of the Fiat and the Ferrari. But, you know, if you were traveling at 50 mile an hour in the Fiat, then you'd get there in the same speed and whatever it is you would in a Ferrari, but I'd probably feel much happier and much more comfortable traveling at 50 mile an hour in a Ferrari. So, you know, what you're talking about is, the Pentax will give you 40 megapixels of pin sharp, great images in most situations because that's what it's designed for. The Nokia will give you 40 odd megapixels in very good situations that as long as you don't try and print it as a 40 megapixel picture, you'll be fine. I mean, it's brilliant for a phone. That's what it is. It's brilliant for a phone and crappy for a camera. And the
Pentax it's crappy for a medium format camera.
Yeah, and the Pentax is pretty good for a medium format camera and a quarter of the price of a lot of other medium format cameras. So, you know, you're not even bothering to put the best camera phone against the best medium format camera. So, it's a terrible comparison, but what it does do is say that Nokia is not bad for a phone.
Excellent. Any last words, Kev?
No, I still see the number of megapixels. There, too many people are focusing on that. I mean, they do that with point and shoots, and it's really not an apples to apples comparison because it's, the size of those pixels are different, and you know, on a point and shoot, it might be 2.5 microns wide, and on a professional camera, it might be 8 microns wide, but the same number of megapixels. But they don't tell the public that, so that's part of the ruse that I think that they're playing in a marketing sense. It's great publicity, but I didn't see the images holding up, at least when you blew them up. Now you take an image like you said, if it's just for vacation, fine, but beyond that, it doesn't have a commercial application for me.
Two students, Luke Evans and Josh, someone or other, Josh Lake, were given an end of season project for their college course in photography and told to come up with something called outside. So what they decided to do was swallow a piece of film to expose their insides and so that they could be on the outside. They took film, didn't expose it to light, swallowed it, and it passed through them and came out, apparently, with a series of marks, scratches and bumps that, under an electron microscope, created a number of dramatic shapes and images. A lot of people think that because no light was used, it's not photography. Technically, that might be true, but we feel it doesn't make any less intriguing and doesn't devalue the work of our project, said Josh. Fellas, you're going to give him an A?
I'd give him an A for effort, but I give him an F for following directions.
I'd give him an enema.
I'd give him an A from across the room. What bothered me there was that they said that when put under an electron microscope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's A, how many schools have got electron microscopes that can do that? And B, I hope they washed it first.
Yeah, that needed to spend a lot of time in the fixer before I'd touch it.
Exactly.
I think that's quite inventive, even if it's not technically photography. Well,
yeah, I like what Chris said. Give him an A for effort, but it didn't show what's inside you. It just showed what your insides do to film.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The scratches and bumps that it puts on them. You could have died from stuff like that. That's crazy, kid.
Try doing that with a daguerreotype. That'd sting a bit, wouldn't it?
Why? I know they did it with 35mm, but what about 10x8?
Yeah.
make a 10x8 omelette. Now then, if you swallow celluloid for a hobby and you've got no friends, Solo Shot is a fantastic system that you can use to capture yourself when you're on holiday. All you have to do is wear a silly looking dongle thing that stands on your arm, and this box will take your camera and automatically focus it and point it at where you are.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I've got no idea why you would buy this, unless it's to watch your kids or something, but on an iPad. But
I think made for like surfers to be able to like shoot themselves?
Yeah, I saw it as having a lot. I mean, all the examples shown were mostly water sport examples, and those are practical applications. You know, water skiing, surfing, jet skiing, anything you want to do across the water, but you don't have anybody sitting on the side, you know, ready to film it. I thought it was a brilliant concept, and it probably will have some good, you know, applications even in the commercial market. But yeah, I don't think I would need one, but it's certainly interesting. I mean, you know, if you want to videotape your kid,
this is I'm looking at this promo image. This is perfect. It's just the guy's girlfriend is just laying on the beach, completely oblivious to what's happening around her, while he's like trying to surf and get pictures.
Yeah, when he's kidnapped, we'll have footage. We'll find him. We'll know who did it.
Yeah, when the shark eats him, they'll know that the shark ate him.
She was totally disinterested and unimpressed, but camera was working for him.
No, she's probably to be fair to her, she's probably got 50 Shades of Grey there. That's why she's not paying attention. The thing that bothers me about this is all of those kind of things that follow, that allegedly follow you, never follow you. You know, you're out there, you're a quarter mile out in the surf, and this thing's really going to track you from the beach. And
it says it can rotate like 40 degrees in a second.
That's impressive. If that actually delivers, I think it's fantastic. Well done. But I question whether it'll do it.
Up to 2,000 feet away and track things moving at up to 140 miles an hour. So you can drag racing.
That's a hell of a boast.
Yeah. You don't even have to have your girlfriend stand there disinterested filming you while you drag race. You can just set your camera up and drive your car.
You'd need a security guard to stop some bugger nicking it, though, wouldn't you?
It's a device for people with no friends. That's what it is. That's all it is. I'm telling you.
It's a device. No, I disagree. I think it's a device for people who don't have friends who know jack about photography or videography. I mean, what I mean? Like, I honestly, there aren't a whole lot of people I'd trust to hand a camera over to and be like, get a good picture of me doing this.
What you need as well is a camera on the little armband, so when someone's nicking your video camera, that follows it and points where it is as well as.
Yeah.
With a GPS on it.
What you need is a Nokia 808 so you can get a really decent 40 megapixel shot at the same time.
Now, if you have got friends, there's a new application out, Flock. And Flock is about grouping your photos based on your mates. So you end up with albums that are intelligent photo albums that are based around the people that you know. I thought this was kind of interesting. This seemed like a really cool idea. No?
I think it'll be a while before it catches on, because in order for that to work, everybody that are in the pictures or anybody who wants to participate has to download and have that app on their phone as well. So
yeah,
that's the only drawback, is that it's not something that's, you know, that just you can use. Your friends, family, and everybody in the photographs that you're going to use it for would have to have it as well.
Hmm. It's available in the App Store. I'll just try and fetch a price for you. But Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's just one of these things. Like, it's with every social media thing, and it depends on who's using it. And I know, like, when I first got into Instagram, the great thing was that, you know, it pushed it out to all these different services that all my friends were already using. So even though they weren't using Instagram, you know, I could still easily share it with these other things. And I'm not sure that, I think Flock, to me, the way it's set up now, seems a little more insular. And I'm not, you know, it's, again, it's just the benefit's going to be when there's a lot of people using it, or people you already know use it, then that's when there's really an extra benefit. I'm not sure I see anything extra outside of, you know, apps that already exist.
I mean, it's free, so that's a good thing. Any thoughts, Alex?
No, it's just all been done before. It's just been put in a nice box with a fancy F on the front.
Well, to be fair, though, I think that what's different about this is what it's doing is it's saying, if you're a group of people who go away on holiday together, then you can end up with an album of that holiday for all of those people, because they'll all contribute to that album. So everyone gets a copy of all the photos that everyone took, which I think is quite a nice idea.
Yeah, but you can do that
for a wedding or something.
Yeah, you do that in Flickr anyway, don't you?
Okay.
You just... No,
that's the point. That is the point. You have to do it rather than the application doing it for you.
Sure. I mean, this is a shortcut to something that's available. And if people are at an event and they're purely shooting on their iPhone and nothing else, it makes sense, but it's not something that couldn't be done before. It's it'll do okay as long as people hear about it.
Okie doke. Fair enough.
Sorry.
No worries. Insert Coin has also got a Kickstarter type project going for an image stabilizer for iPhone. Now, when I read this, I thought I was getting really excited about it being an image stabilizer, and it's nice just to stand from what I can see. I don't think it really does image stabilization to that kind of level.
Hmm.
No?
It just looks like a tripod for an iPod.
That's all I thought, yeah.
And which I think if they mass produce it and mass distribute it, it's got great potential. I mean, people will buy it. You know, they may only use it once or twice, but they will buy it. You know, I know my wife would buy it. Let's put it that way. And if she'll buy it, I mean, she buys a lot of stuff that we don't use. Don't tell her I said that.
You did ask her to lock you in there, didn't you, earlier? So you may not get out, dude, if she's listening live.
She's not here right now.
No, but the point is, you are, and you can't get out. Ah, well, never mind. And another little project that's out for your Instagram photos is PicPack, which gives you magnets. So you take your Instagram photos, shove them onto a printed board, and you get through the envelope back, and you've got little tiny fridge magnets and that kind of stuff to throw around in the house. I like this as well. This looked dead interesting.
I know there's another, you know, I can't remember the name of it, but there's another company that offers something similar. And you just go to their website, or they might even have an app, but I'm pretty sure you just go to their website and you can hook up your Instagram account and just pick out some pictures, and they just send you a stack of magnets.
Hmm.
I think it's brilliant. I think magnets are great because they're square, They're, you know, Instagram is square, everything is square, which I love because I used to shoot in square with in the medium format days. But I think it's a brilliant idea, and it's got a lot of potential. People take great pride in their Instagram photos, and some people only pull that Instagram out when they got something that looks artistic. They're not just shooting it for everyday pictures. They're shooting Instagram for stuff that they want to enhance with the Instagram filter and then share with the world. And I think there's a lot of potential for magnets like that. I mean, even in a commercial application, I could see that working.
I mean, Teresa's in the chat and saying that's really fun, especially for kids. And I think that's the point is, you know, my lad's just got hold of my wife's camera and he makes little tiny movies or he takes individual pictures, making up stories with his Lego figures, his Star Wars figures, that kind of stuff. And if he had a little Instagram account that we could put it to, send it off and it comes back as some little fridge magnets. And then he could have these fridge magnets of individual characters, put them on the washing machine or the fridge, and just start moving stuff around and making up little stories. It would be a great little, you know, non-computer game-like activity for him, just to get him creative and thinking. I applaud it, definitely. The best way of using that, because otherwise, you know, Flickr, Instagram, Facebook, all of those places just become black holes for photos. You don't do anything with them apart from if you've got the URL, you go and look. So I'm in with you, Kev, on that one. Chris, you like it? Alex?
Yeah, I've used, I mentioned another similar magnet service, but I've used Canvas Pop has a feature where you can just upload your Instagrams and have a square canvas made. We've done that, and I made one for my girlfriend, and she loves it. There's some other services that make interesting things with Instagrams. I know I talked about here in Walgreens, which is a national drugstore chain, has an API where you can set up your apps to upload pictures directly and have them printed. And they're right now, I don't think they have it ready yet, but they're setting up all their machines to print square pictures so that people can use their Instagrams, because they found during their testing that right away people wanted to print Instagram pictures. But the problem is, you know, when you get a square image and upload it to the system, it just automatically enlarges it to fit a 4x6 and then cuts off the top and bottom. So they basically just have to program their Frontier Mini Labs to accept a square image and then fit it right in the middle.
Cool. Alex, anything to finish off?
Magnets are really good. I mean, something that we've been doing for a while now, just for grandparents and things, because of, you know, over time, there's only so many picture frames people can have sitting around the house. But fridge magnets are a really cool way of sending out, you know, little birthday pictures of your kids and things, because of, you know, they're not very big, and you know the size of a fridge, and especially American fridges, you could probably get a couple of thousand on there. So it's a really nice way of storing photographs. Mm. And it's a shame it has to be probably something that's did the life Instagrammed out of it, but that's, you know, that's a side issue. But fridge magnet, it's a really nice way of going. It's a nice thing to send with a thank you card as well. You know,
an image.
Yeah, it works really well, and then people just throw them on the fridge, and it stays there for 10 years once you throw them. No one ever gets rid of a fridge magnet.
No, that's true. Good one. Last of the stories then. Cynar have released a digital back for medium format cameras. This thing allegedly does from 12 megapixels up to 192 megapixels with some jiggery pokery. And it puts out a 1 gig file for that. and I started reading the specs, and it says shoots 13 frames. And I was waiting for a second. My head was already on, wow, that's really impressive. And it's not, it's a minute. Which is still quite good. Alex, you're the medium format man here, a bit more than the rest of us, perhaps. What's your view on this?
Yeah, I couldn't find a price. All I know is the Hasselblad version, I think they call an H4DS or something. I can't remember what it's called now. But what they do, it's a single sensor, which on this case is 48.8 megapixels. And it's a large sensor. It's, 48 mil by 36 mil. So, you know, it's a big old sensor. It makes that Nokia thing.
big old sensor.
Yeah, you compare that to the Nokia and you think, hold on a minute, you've got virtually the same megapixelage on something that's 100 times the size. But what they do, there's Hasselblad started to do it with their 3D technology. It takes up to four shots. I don't know if this one does shot four. I'm not sure what it does. And it overlays them. Overlays them. So you get ridiculously high megapixelage. But one of the things you can do, rather than get the megapixelage, you can get such unbelievably sharp images by overlaying. It works really, really well. Hasselblad were doing it as an upgrade to existing cameras. It literally is, you don't change the sensor at all. It's just a little bit of jiggery-pokery that goes inside. But it's a very nice marketplace. But I've got to admit, I would have hazarded a guess this must come in around 8,000 to 10,000 or something for a decent bag.
Yeah, I'm on their site and there's no prices, which is always worrying.
And I bet it's even more. I mean, Cinar stuff usually costs some money, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's even more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I wouldn't just go with one of the old Phase Ones. I mean, there's quite a few companies that make these sort of backs. I think even Minolta might still do them. And I'm sure I can't believe they'd be putting out something that wasn't up to, you know, scratch. But, you know, you've got to remember that it's not so much the back that matters with these sort of cameras. It's the lens and the camera body you stick them on. This is an awful lot of money for a back. You've still got to have I don't know, some of the Pentaxes might take backs, but I doubt it. So you've got to have a compatible body. Remembering the body, a lot of these digital backs now will only go on bodies, even though they're not digital bodies, but they'll only actually go on bodies that are designed for digital backs. So in the old days, Hasselblad had a system where you could use an old film Hasselblad and stick a back on it, and they've stopped making that now, so you can't actually even use the old Hasselblad system. So it's a very top-end professional bit of equipment, but
this does come with an adapter that fits most digital, most cameras.
It's right. So I mean, it's
for studio work, obviously. Yeah, like you said. I mean, I can't even imagine using something like this in the field. I mean, there's no screen. You got to shoot tethered, so it's clearly designed strictly for studio use. And I could see there. I mean, there's certainly applications for that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anyone else got any thoughts?
It's a commercial application.
Yeah.
It's great for product work, probably, and billboards, but I couldn't use it in my studio.
No. I've always wanted a medium format. I just never got around to doing it, and I can't justify the investment. That's the thing. I wouldn't use it enough. I don't do that kind of stuff, so never mind.
I used to have a 645N. The first autofocus Pentax 645 they brought out. It was one of the first autofocus. I think it was the first autofocus medium format DSLR, and I loved that thing. And I shot it every chance I got. And I mean, it was big, and it was way heavier than my 35mm stuff. But you could just look right at the negative and tell if you nailed a shot or not. You didn't even have to wait and see a print.
No, but that click when you used to take the pair, that shutter release,
it's a clunk.
Exactly. Clunk. It's like someone smashing it with a sledgehammer. You know you've taken that picture. It's not like one of these little girly clicks you get nowadays. You almost had to hold on for dear life just because the shutter was being released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's great. Don't use it for shooting weddings, for sure.
No.
Questions in. Here we go. First one. Question from Rex Brooks of Daventry here in the UK. He says, "Hi, guys. Love the show. Keep going no matter what." Don't know what's happening, but there you go. I've got a Nikon D5500 and I'd like to start doing more with wildlife photography. Can you recommend a lens which would be great to get me going, which would also give me a longer term value for money? Good question. Anyone start us off? I mean, two of you, definitely Nikon, man. Kevin?
Well, if he says wildlife, but he didn't specify, does he want to shoot bears or bugs? If you're going to shoot bears, I'd go at least 300.
He's in Daventry, mate. The wildlife in Daventry is an angry pigeon. Christ's sake.
Well, then a good 7300 variable aperture is an inexpensive lens. I think it runs about 500-600 US, but It's not a bad lens to have. 7300, a variable aperture, you know, ranging from 4.5 to 5.6. You know, if you're going to be outdoors, you don't really need to have 2.8 all the time. So that's not a bad lens for the price.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to recommend the exact same thing.
I'm going to be slightly different.
Ah, there's a surprise. Yeah. Good on you, mate.
Right, 5500 is a DX, right? So what I would buy, I'd buy a 55-200 on a full frame. So you'd get more or less 70-300, but when you eventually upgrade to a full frame camera, it will then be useful on a full frame camera.
I think you just got that backwards. The 70-300 is going to be useful on a full frame camera.
No, no,
55-200 is only going to work on DX.
No. You want an FX camera. You want an FX lens on a DX camera.
Yeah, so I got you. No, you got that right.
I thought I did.
So yeah. No, I got you there.
But the 55-200 is DX only.
No. I'm saying I get an FX 55-200. So when you use it on a DX, you'll get the multiplier.
They don't make that.
I think you'll find they do.
Right, quickly, come on. We've got to decide whether this is true or not.
Get a lens that's shorter.
Get the 70-300.
There's a 70-200.
This pedantry, it's too much. Right, what are we looking for? I'll come back to you. All right, you do something else.
I'm looking it up right now for you.
Yeah, I mean, 70-300s generally are kind of good prices. Even if you talk about the Canon range, the 70-300 comes out about £250, and it's a decent enough quality lens. And the one that's on Wex Photography here is 70-300, 4.5-5.6, and that's £439. So again,
you can buy an 18-200 if you wanted on a DX. Then
yeah, I mean, the only thing that you get with the 18-200s. I find, or 28s to 300s, is you get really soft, really, really badly at the end. Whereas the 70-300, it still gets soft at the end, but it's not as bad, is it? I know on the Canon, I can't talk about Nikon. So on the Canon,
I mean that's true. All those super zooms, you're definitely
they get real soft. Yeah, they're real soft at the end. Alex is going to keep looking while we do question two. We do need. You got to post a link in the chat room, mate, when you find it.
Yeah, sorry, I refreshed the wrong screen.
That's all right. You keep going. We'll manage. Question two. Hi, guys. Simple question, I suppose. When should I use a polarizing filter, and what does it do? Grant, Wisconsin. Kev?
Me?
Yeah.
I haven't used lens filters since digital, but if you're going to, then typically, I would have used a polarizing filter at the beach or photographing a bride at noon outdoors where you've got to darken your skies and keep control of your highlights, around a swimming pool, that kind of thing. Wherever there's water, polarizing filters is good to keep the color in the water and not so much reflection. But I stopped using them, you know, when the world went digital, and I gave up most of my film cameras. I gave up most of my filters as well.
Ooh. I still got a polarizing filter. Chris?
Yeah, one of the things that a polarizer does really well is reduce reflections. So like you said, water, glass, anything non-metallic, it can't do anything for reflections on metal. I mean, I used to use one all the time, but I used to shoot a lot of cars for people. People do like custom cars and things like that. So you use a polarizer, and it's also really, really good for shooting. If you're doing a kind of like landscape or things with sky in it, or what else can it be really handy for? Architecture.
It's good for things like car windshields or windows or that kind of thing, isn't it?
But it can, in landscapes, it can really deepen the color of like skies and even like leaves and things like that, because what you don't really realize is that a leaf has all these reflections from the sun on it. And when you use a polarizer filter, it has an adjustable angle, and you can adjust that angle to minimize those reflections. Then you get like deeper colors from trees and even grass and things like that. But it also deepens the blue of the sky too. So it has some really interesting applications.
Yeah, I mean the key word that to use with a polarizing filter is attenuation. Though it's people think it enhances stuff and it doesn't. It attenuates. It stops, and it stops frequencies to make sure that you enhance other frequencies by the fact that the others aren't blowing them out. That's mm-hmm. the key part. It's a stopper. It's not a giver. So whenever you're doing, if you're in a crap situation where you've got relatively poor light but some things are blowing out, then putting your circular polarizer on may help to stop the things that are blowing out, but you're not going to help the other things that are underexposed. You've got to have large, you know, generally like Kev says, by the pool, by the seaside, that kind of stuff, where you've generally got good sun, lots and lots of light to work with, then a polarizer will come in. And if you're shooting digital, don't forget to get a circular polarizer rather than a standard polarizer, because otherwise your autofocus won't work. But it's attenuation, that's the key part. Alex has found a DX 55-200 DX lens at and mm-hmm. it's at Argos, £169, yeah. Down from £184.
I'm still being argued by Chris. If you listen back to the show, which I'm sure you never do, I did make the point that you need a okay, you got a DX version. I'm sure they do an FX version. I typed in actually DX because that's what I was looking for, but. Yeah. Do you want to know, I use the polarizers very occasionally when I'm shooting things that are through glass. Mm-hmm. It does help me, but one of the things I do also use is I polarize my actual lights itself. Sometimes I need to polarize the lights because of when you're shooting things which are, if I'm shooting certain artists' work, what they, you know, there's actually such a heavy texture on their paintings. I mean, that's their style of painting, that I get so much reflection, I get so much varnish, high points and various things. So I use polarized lights, and that way I can limit the actual highlights on the texture.
Mm.
So you can polarize both things.
Excellent. Question 3. Hi, photo boys. I was recently diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and being a keen photographer, one of the things which made me get tested was that I noticed my eyesight appeared to be deteriorating more rapidly than I thought it should, amongst other things. Please tell everyone not to panic if they're just getting old, though. I now have to shoot with glasses and have a friend who is an ophthalmologist who's got me in contact with some people who've given me some great glasses. That said, he can't help me with glasses technique. I'm finding shooting in glasses very difficult. As Chris mm-hmm. and Alex wear glasses all the time, any ideas, tips, tricks, etc. to overcome it? Please don't just say practice. And how do I use the diopter mechanism on the viewfinder? You three are all blind boys, so I'm expecting top quality answers off the lot of you. Chris, start us off.
Yeah, so I, as you can see, have very thick glasses. I can see okay without them. I have an astigmatism, and so it makes the edges of objects appear fuzzy. And
are you saying you take them off?
So, yeah.
Right. Okay. So you can't help, is what you're saying?
No. I'm just saying. I'm. What I'm trying to explain is you have to accept some compromises. For me, a diopter doesn't work, because my problem is astigmatism, not nearsighted or farsightedness. So diopter doesn't work. I just shoot without my glasses if it's critical, and if it's not, then I keep my glasses on. It's harder to, you know, with the glasses on, it's just harder to frame. They used to make things you could snap onto the viewfinder that would change the magnification, and you could see the full frame even with your glasses, but they don't really do that anymore.
Mm.
You can also have some ophthalmologists will custom grind a viewfinder diopter. Like you can get a little frame for your particular camera and then take it to ophthalmologist, and they'll grind a little lens to fit in there that basically matches your prescription. That's a technique I've seen some people who have pretty bad eyesight use. But for me, I mean, mine is just good enough that I can do it. I mean, I can manually focus even without my glasses on, pretty well. And honestly, I was able to do that through practice. So,
okay, so let's go to someone who can help then. Kevin.
I can't. He can get LASIK. I can't perform LASIK surgery for him.
When I look through the viewfinder, I look over my glasses. Okay, I use my glasses when I'm looking at the preview window. But the diopter, which is right there, okay, on the back, right next to the viewfinder, it's adjustable, and it does the same thing your glasses do. So I'll either shoot over or under, but I use, you know, that you twist that little knob plus or minus, and it will fix it to adjust to your eye. Either manually focus or auto focus the camera, and then adjust the diopter till the image looks as sharp as it possibly can be. And that's really all. That's the only advice I could give you. But which I don't know if that's much, but that should help.
I mean, I don't wear glasses normally. I just wear them for reading. But I mean, I've never used the diopter. I've never twiddled the knob at all. Do you have to calibrate? Is it like, you know, you set it up on a tripod, you focus on something, you get the autofocus, you know it's sharp, and then you adjust the diopter till it looks right, and then that's kind of calibrated for you?
That's exactly right to your eyesight.
Okay.
Just look through it, and you do it until you can see what you can see. Look, there's three things that you can do, right? One, you carry handkerchiefs around with you all the time, because as soon as you shove a camera in your face, especially in the winter, it steams up your glasses. All right, so you always need to carry glasses.
I thought the handkerchief was like an addition that you wrapped around something. You're saying you just wipe the condensation off?
Yeah. If you wear glasses and take pictures, every 2 minutes you'll be cleaning your glasses. Right. It's quite incredible. The other thing is, you know the rubber you can get on the back of the viewfinder? Yeah. You can get larger ones which extend your eye slightly further away from the viewfinder. And what that does, it's you're not crushing your face then onto the back of the camera. You do find over time that you're a lot more gentle when you put your face to it anyway. But I mean, so I won't say practice, but you do find it gets easier. But if you use a larger rubber on the back, it takes your face slightly further away. But you do need the rubber because you can't have all the external light coming in because you can't really see. And thirdly, use live view if you're in trouble.
Live view, yeah. But I mean... Even that is I mean, if I use live view, I have to rely on autofocus anyway. I just frame through the viewfinder. But if I've got live view, I definitely need my glasses on to focus with that. And even that's, I could do with about four times the power in my glasses to use it.
Yeah, but those rubber, those rubber things are made so that if you're wearing the glasses, it makes the aperture you look through a lot bigger as well. It's not just takes it further away, it widens the aperture that your glasses sit against. So, you know, it works. Also, another thing you can do, which I used to do, you can cup over your own eye like this. I mean, no one can see, but if you, like, you're playing I See No Ships, you know, pretending to be Nelson or something, you can then look through that, and that takes your eye away from the back of the camera as well.
Let me just make a note of that title. I See No Ships.
There yeah, it's go. Got a P.
Sorry. I thought I was going to get the bleep machine out. Don't use left to start the green counter on Photoshop. So none of that really helped then. Sorry, Grant.
It's all doable.
Practice, mate.
Don't say it.
Practice.
Well, the diopter on the back of the camera is exactly like the diopter on a pair of binoculars. You ever been at a sporting event and somebody hands you their binoculars and you look through it and it's all fuzzy, but you turn that one or you dial something up front in the middle and suddenly it all comes into focus. Then you hand it back to the guy. Now it's out of focus for him. So that diopter on the back of the viewfinder will be germane to your eyesight. I've had people hand me a camera at a wedding or an event and I look through the back of it and I can't make out anything because that diopter is not set for my eyesight. So I just have to rely on the autofocus to push it button and hand it back to him. But it's just like it is on a pair of binoculars.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Perhaps, you know, if depending on what the circumstance is, if you give yourself a little bit more on the f-stop as well, that may help.
Yeah.
Just in case you're out, if you really do. But I've given up shooting in manual. I can't do it. My eyes are too bad now. Pointless.
Where can we get still do it.
All right. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Forsman?
ArsTechnica.com is a good place to check out my awesome writing.
Yeah.
But if that's not really your cup of tea, as you Brits may say, hit me up on the Twitters at Forsmac.
Thank you, sir. Well done. Mr. Newsom, where are you?
Kevin@NewsomStudio.com or Twitter @NewsomStudio.
Thank you, sir. And lastly, Mr. Fox.
You can get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter. Just to come back on something Chris said. Chris, I didn't know iPhone 4Ss or iPhone 4s had the option to shoot in manual. Or focus in manual even.
I still have DSLRs, my friend. I even have a film SLRs.
We'll be back again next week.
I have a Polaroid with a rangefinder.
Chris and Alex are going to get into a ring and sort this out the proper way with a set of boxing gloves, and one of them won't be here next week. We'll be back though for the rest of the photo. Send us your questions in. Send them into britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and we'll read your questions out and answer them. See, we do it every week. Send them in, and if you've got any good stories as well, Chris is just in the chat room. Just put us in a link to one of his friends who started a video dolly firm. So we'll have a look at that next week, though, not this week. Have a good week. Happy shooting. Send us your pictures. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.